Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Jeff Byers. Jeff, how we doing this conference championship game week?
I am telling you, just fine. Unexpected surprises abound, Mr. Galante, and I'm enjoying every second of it.
It did blindside all of us. Obviously, we're going to spend a lot of time on the conference championship game. But, Jeff, this is also National Signing Day week for, Penn State and everybody else on the collegiate field. Penn State had 26 commits. They had 26 signatures by the end of the day. Depending on which service you look at, they're ranked like 16th, 17th, 18th. Your thoughts on Penn State's recruiting efforts?
Yeah, I think it's perfectly fine. I think, you got to see – I think sometimes we get too worked up about a particular ranking with a particular class. Now, I think, again, over a 4 or 5 year period, you get a pretty good idea. All right, this is where this program is. And generally speaking, it pans out pretty accurately. Again, you can have some aberrations, really good or really bad, or relatively good, relatively bad, here or there. But Penn State generally seems to be in that 10 to 15 range with most of its classes. This one seemingly a little outside, which given the success of the last three seasons, I think would qualify as a mild disappointment. But again, it's always a qualifier to me, Jim, because it's, all right, well, how good do these guys fit in with the system? Do you have a couple of guys that are diamonds in the rough that you just feel better about than other people do, and your feelings will be warranted. So I don't get too caught up on, wow, they're 18th, not 15th, or they're 16th, not 13th. They're in the ballpark. Again, it's probably a little disappointing given what I think is the overall momentum right now of the program, but I don't think it's exactly, man, it's time to jump off the bridge type of stuff.
I'm ready to jump off the bridge, Jeff.
Oh, no, don't do it, Jim.
No, I'll tell you what. There's a lot that I read into all this. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I don't think you could overreact to an individual class. I think you have to go over multiple years. So towards that end, Jeff, I took a look back over the last 6 years of Penn State recruiting. And they, starting with this class, 2025, then 24, all the way back to 2020, here are their rankings. 17th this year in the service that I'm looking at. 17th, 14th, 14th, 8th, 20th, and 17th. The outlier was that 2022 class, which was the current folks that are in their third year. Drew Aller, Nick Singleton, this group, really, I think that shows you what recruiting is about and what having a top 10 recruiting class can do for you, Jeff.
Yeah, and getting, again, more of those elite players, that is the difference maker, Jim, when we're talking about, all right, a national championship or a top 10 type of program. Now, the other variable that obviously figures in now, and I think this kind of plays out along the similar lines, is the transfer portal. So at least in theory, you could have some of these five-star kids say, Georgia isn't for me, or Ohio State isn't for me after a couple of years. Now, generally speaking, again, those programs, Penn State included, The kids they're losing are kids that they're okay losing. There's going to be exceptions here and there, again, kind of across the board. But you're not seeing, with the exception of maybe a coaching change, wholesale departures from any of these top 10, probably top 20 programs. But could you have a key guy or two that leaves or a key guy or two that comes in to, like, say, Penn State, of course. So there's always, you know, there's an additional caveat, I guess, to all of these recruiting classes and rankings. But, yeah, generally speaking, again, there's a reason Penn State has pretty consistently been in a, you know, 6 to 10 top program in the country, but not a top four. And I think those class rankings would show you exactly that.
And, Jeff, there's actually a point to my exercise here. It's just taking me a while to get to it. But
well, I'm glad. You at least, you're further ahead than most of my exercises, because usually yeah, there's no point. Let's just do it. So kudos to you for actually having a point here.
Well, wait till I make the point before you congratulate me on it, Jeff. Okay. And where I'm headed with this is, well, a couple different things. One is I'm going to ultimately talk about James Franklin and the narrative on James Franklin. What are some of the things that we think we know? Because the national narrative has told us this is the case. James Franklin is a great recruiter. I actually think he is a very good recruiter. But it's not like because of his recruiting prowess, they keep coming up with top five recruiting classes that he then undercoaches. The fact that typically his classes are in the teens, yet he regularly ranks in the top 10 with his team, I think gives us a little different message, don't you?
I do. And again, I kind of look at everything together, Jim, and that's why I think Penn State really is largely exactly where it should be, which is when you look at the investment in the program, and it's a lot, but it's not what Ohio State has invested. It's not what Georgia has invested. You look at the resources available and the amount of money spent on the athletic budget. It's a lot. It's not what Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State are spending. So, I mean, across the board, I just think you consistently see, all right, you know, James Franklin, I think he's now the 12th or 13th highest paid head coach in the country. Well, I would argue, given all of the different things we're talking about, Penn State's getting a bargain for its investment. And I'm talking about in the football program as a whole, when you compare it to other programs. And yeah, to your point on the recruiting front, I'm with you. I think Franklin is a very good recruiter, but I think he's actually a better developer of talent, a better game day coach than he gets credit for. And I think, you know, a lot of the things that he gets slammed for, if they would have worked, we'd turn around and praise. And I, you know, you need to look no further than the Minnesota game this year. Again, if that fake punt, if one kid misses a block and Minnesota blows that thing up and wins the game on a late touchdown or field goal as a result of, hey, here you go, here's field position inside our 30. Well, that's an entirely different conversation we're having, because they make it and everybody executes that play brilliantly and they get two more fourth down conversions. It's, oh boy, well, Franklin maybe has figured some things out on the coaching front. And that's across the board. I mean, that's not just a James Franklin thing. That's coaches in general. There's risk reward, and you know, you sometimes you roll the dice and you come up big, and sometimes you roll the dice and you come up short. But I think largely narratives then get written about whether or not those particular situations work out or don't.
I'm glad you brought up that fake punt, Jeff, because it's also, it's not just about the decision to do it. It's having your team well prepared to execute it. That goes into the coaching all week, not just the decision made on Saturday. But you also talked about Ohio State and where they are. So, Jeff, I looked at the last 6 years of Penn State's recruiting, where the best ranking, and at least in the service I was looking at, was 14th, except for the one outlier where they were 8th, okay? Yep. So we've got that in our head. I thought maybe I would check and take a look at Ohio State's recruiting over the last 6 years, starting in 2020. I can't, you know what? I can't say 2020 without thinking of Barbara Walters, Baba Wawa. Anyway, let's go through Ohio State's recruiting ranking over these last 6 years. You ready for this, Jeff?
Let's do it.
5-2-4-4-5-5. 6 consecutive years of top 5 recruiting rankings. Penn State, not once top 5 in the last 6 years, only one top 10 recruiting classes, and you wonder why Ohio State usually beats Penn State.
Yep. It's not complicated, and it really does, to a very large degree, come down to money, and even more so maybe now between the well, with the NIL and everything else that now goes into college athletics and big-time programs. And so, yeah, I mean, I get the frustration for Penn State fans and you know, even within the program. But again, I don't think it's all that complicated when you're trying to figure out, why is this happening?
And, Jeff, I think my point to all this is I think James Franklin gets underrated too often for what he's done. So right now they're an 11-1 team going into a conference championship game. And oh, by the way, that Ohio State team that brings in top 5 recruiting classes every year, they've got 2 losses and they are not in the conference championship game. All right. And one last note while we're talking recruiting, I think we might have a new power in the Big Ten. Since they're playing Oregon, I went over their last 6 years of recruiting. 14, 7, 16, 9, 4, and 4 these last 2 years. I think NIL kind of works in Oregon's favor, Jeff. Maybe it has something to do with that Phil Knight guy. Jeff, that's going to be it for quarter number 1. I will get off my recruiting tirade. We'll actually talk about things on the field when we come back. With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at 4 major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pregame meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Jeff Byers. This is quarter number 2 of our show. Jeff, we spent the first quarter. I was throwing out lots of numbers on the recruiting front. I wrapped it up by talking about Oregon. I didn't let you have a final say on it, but my just thought is Oregon, their last 2 recruiting classes were top 5. In the transfer portal, they brought in people like quarterback Dylan Gabriel. Oregon is going to be a power to be reckoned with, aren't they, over the next few years?
They are, and again, it helps when you have a Phil Knight who has a sense of urgency about him for what he wants to see with that program. And, you know, yeah, they have a terrific coach. They have a great program already established. So all of that certainly working in their favor. It is kind of interesting to me, Jim, that when you look around college football right now, and I hadn't really thought about it. I was listening to some of the Fox Sports programming this week, and like you look at the newcomers to these conferences and, oh, hello SMU in the ACC championship game. Well, greetings, Oregon, in the Big Ten championship game. Huh, there's Texas in the SEC championship game. It is amazing in some ways, and again, in others, maybe not so much because, again, NIL and everything that comes with it, but the immediate impact, and we'll see what happens in these championship games, but the immediate impact that some of these new kids on the block are bringing. And again, I think the potential in some of these cases, like this isn't going to be a one-off for Oregon or for, you know, I don't think for SMU or Texas. I mean, these are programs that I think are going to be around a while. And even, you know, you look at Arizona State in the Big 12. I mean, you could have your four of your five conference champions. And really, I guess even with Boise State, your five conference champions all be relatively new schools to their conferences, and in, you know, four of the cases, brand spanking new schools to their conferences.
That's a good point, Jeff, and I hadn't thought about it this way, but you could have both Arizona State and Oregon winning their conferences.
Yeah,
kudos to the Pac-12, huh?
How about it? Yep, makes you wonder.
And I'll tell you what, though. I think the most interesting story, though, is SMU. And for in the ACC, first of all, which is a surprise. And I don't – do you know the story of how they got into the ACC, Jeff?
I don't know that I do, no. I don't think I do.
Well, they bought their way in. They are like, sacrificing their first 7 years or so of – their share, revenue share, to get themselves into a big conference, to get themselves into ACC, so they don't get lost in this whole conference shuffle, which could easily happen. But yeah, their backers, that they wanted it so badly. And by coincidence, I remember before the season started, listening to one of the national college sports shows where they had the SMU coach on. Very impressive. But he talked about there's a specific SMU donor who had played on the basketball team at SMU, who was the one who was pulling the strings in all of this. But it was interesting to hear the end of the discussion was, you know, SMU, they're going to make their presence felt, but they could probably make it to the top half of the ACC. And it'll be a few years before they're a factor at the championship level. Well, guess what, Jeff? Year one, they're a factor.
No question about it. And again, I think they're going to be a factor here for the foreseeable future. And again, in some ways, like, money has always mattered and has always been a big part of the story here. It just maybe is now more openly apparent what a driving force it is in college athletics. And yeah, you get the right donor or two, and man, what a difference it can make, for sure.
Lo and behold. All right, Jeff, let's talk a little bit about how we got here with the Penn State-Oregon conference championship game. We started the show talking about the surprise. I think, was Michigan beating Ohio State anything less than just stunning?
No. And again, just because, I mean, on one hand, it, like, rivalry games, and I do think legitimately there's a reason everybody says, you can throw out the record books, and emotion does come in differently in those games. But in this particular matchup, Jim, again, everything on paper would favor Ohio State. The fact that they had lost the last three and this rivalry means so much to both programs, that would indicate to you that, well, man, Ohio State really wants us. Again, there's no question this year, the more talented team, the more talented roster, up and down is Ohio State, and it's not really that close this year. The fact that it's at Ohio State, it's you know, a home game for the Buckeyes. The fact that Michigan has a couple of defections ahead of the Ohio State. I mean, and not just a couple. I mean, a couple of significant, impactful players for Michigan are like, I'm out. Everything, again, everything was in favor of Ohio State. Mismatch in terms of some of the matchups, and for whatever reason, and I think there's a variety of reasons. One is confidence plays a big role in sports, and I do think Michigan, maybe ridiculously so, is confident against Ohio State after what it did the last 3 years. And, you know, Ohio State, I thought it was clear, just was playing very tight. And they kept wanting to make a point. I think Ryan Day and that coaching staff wanted to make a point that we're going to be as physical or more physical instead of, hey, we have a mismatch here. Let's take advantage of it and let our receivers go make some plays and get this thing to a comfortable position for us. So, yeah, I mean, hats off to Michigan, but also, my goodness, that is a loss that rightfully will sting for a very long time in Columbus.
And Ryan Day just looked stunned on that sideline.
Yeah, I mean, he was saying, I thought, all the right things going into it. It's like, man, we're looking forward to the opportunity. And I think they genuinely, and rightfully, again, felt that they're just a better team. We're going to go out and win the game, because we were so clearly the better football team. But I think as often happens, when you get an underdog hanging close, the longer they're hanging close, the more the favorite. And you could just kind of feel it watching it on TV. It's like Ohio says, oh, no, we can't be doing this again. No. And Michigan's like, oh, here we go. We're going to be doing this again. Oh, yes. And it was just, but it's just crazy to me, because I think there was a reason, and I think it was a very good reason, that Ohio State was close to a 3-touchdown favorite in this game. They on paper, that's about what that game should have been. But man, it just is. It's clearly in Ohio State's head right now. That. The program has a Michigan problem right now.
Yes, there is no doubt about that. And I thought it was funny in watching the game late in the game, Michigan's driving the score and their quarterback, who was awful, throws the late interception. I thought Michigan trying to give it back to Ohio State, but Ohio State would not take it. They just refused to take the game. Then, of course, Jeff, I want to get your take on what happened after the game, the flag planting, the response from the Ohio State team, and then the Big Ten, no suspensions apparently, but we'll just fine each school $100,000.
Yeah, that whole thing, the flag planting thing, I guess I don't really understand. I don't... I'm not even sure exactly where that began or why it's become such a thing. I don't know why you don't just go to your sideline, celebrate, get to the locker room and enjoy each other's company and celebrate kind of in-house. That just has always not sat well with me. And, you know, obviously it was a ridiculous scene that ended up unfolding. And I mean, I've heard all kinds of, well, the police overreacted. These guys, just stop with the shenanigans. Just get off the field, shake hands, get off the field, and get to your locker room and celebrate with your teammates.
Well, my couple quick thoughts on it are, yes, I don't understand the flag planting either. Second, I don't understand the coaches who let it happen. And I mentioned in a previous show how James Franklin put a stop to it when, I guess it was the USC game, when some Penn State players were going to try it. But so not to be the Penn State homer, did you see Steve Sarkisian with Texas? He made a beeline to midfield as soon as he saw that happening to stop his team. So my question is, where in the world were the Michigan coach and Ryan Day? I didn't see any video of the Michigan coach, so it might be unfair for me to criticize him. But Ryan Day stood by while his team was showing more fight after the game than they did during the game.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what all he – I mean, I've seen the video. I'm not – yes, I would have liked to have seen him get out there. Hey, guys, get off the field. I'm not sure how much from his vantage point he was seeing of what was actually occurring. I mean, I think you clearly knew something was going on and why you wouldn't get out there and just see and try to get your guys away and out of it. I agree. Although, I'm telling you, I do think – part of it, Jim, is he was shell-shocked. I mean, he was shell-shocked.
He definitely was that. All right, that's it for quarter number two. Lots more to go, Jeff, when we come back.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff, I'm Jim. It's quarter number three of our show. Jeff, we got through recruiting. We got through last week's Michigan-Ohio State upset and the whole flag-planting shenanigans and the brawls and the police and the pepper spray and Ryan Day standing by and the Big Ten doing practically nothing about it. So same old, same old. Let's move forward. Or did you have one last comment on it? It looked like you were ready to say something.
Let's move on.
All right. Well, it's time for the college football playoff, or conference championship games first, but we have to start this off with the college football rankings, which came out this week. And, Jeff, I don't think there's any more big surprises with the rankings. They've kind of established some things, and week to week, you kind of know what to expect when an Ohio State loses, how they'll drop. But I was curious if this week's final rankings before the conference championship games, if anything stuck out to you.
Well, the two things, I guess, and I don't know that I necessarily have as big a problem as some at least make it out to be that they have, but I do think the clear benefit of the doubt that the SEC gets is remarkable. One of the problems is I don't know how you go about getting a truly fair system. I'm reading different arguments from different people about different things. When you don't have a really comparable schedule and Alabama, I mean, a couple of those losses are bad losses. Now, do I think Alabama is capable of beating just about anybody on a given Saturday? Yeah, probably. But I'm not sure Miami isn't either. If you give Cam Ward, the opportunity, if they can keep it close into the fourth quarter. I think there's a bunch of teams out there like that. And listen, there may be a lot more havoc to be wreaked here with these college championship games. I mean, everybody's presuming Boise State's in there. what if UNLV wins? And what if it's a controversial ending? I mean, is there any chance? And I think the answer is no, but, you know, certainly Boise State will be arguing, hey, I mean, we got to the conference championship game. We have a Heisman Trophy contender, all of this. And, you know, we still deserve consideration. I just, there's a lot of things that, that could play out. Same thing if SMU loses a close game or a controversial ending to Clemson. Is, I mean, SMU, like those schools will have cases to be made. And, you know, what the SEC is going to come back with is, wow, you're not playing in a conference that's nearly as tough. It's just that we always, the SEC always gets the benefit of the doubt when it, because of how tough the conference is. Whereas, you know, the, even in the Big Ten, it's like, well, yeah, you didn't play anybody. Well, I mean, Georgia gets credit for beating a Kentucky because, boy, that's a good Kentucky team. One of the best four-loss Kentucky teams in the country, I guess, that Kentucky is. Whereas Penn State gets, you know, seemingly penalized for winning against a four-loss Minnesota team on the road.
And I think even more specifically, I think it's Alabama that gets the benefit of the doubt. When looking at schedules, Georgia's the only Southeast Conference team that I look at. Their two losses were against top teams, but they also have three wins against top teams. Alabama, their losses were so bad. To lose to Vanderbilt and a bad Oklahoma team, that gets lost in the shuffle. And I wonder at what point, Jeff, do you have to judge a team by how they perform versus, oh, if Alabama were to play Miami, Alabama would be favored. Well, you know what? Right now, if Penn State played Ohio State again on a neutral field, Ohio State would be favored. But Ohio State, they are not in the conference championship game. You know, want to know why? Because they lost twice, including a loss to a 500, essentially, Michigan team. A bad loss. They were a 20-point favorite, and they lost. At what point does performance matter? But it also now leads to the next question, Jeff. How much do you punish the losers of the conference championship games? You started out, you mentioned SMU. Right now, SMU is three slots above Alabama in the rankings.
Yep.
So are you going to use a conference championship game to penalize them, which, by the way, would only be their second loss compared to Alabama's three?
Right. And, you know, this is what I think is going to be fascinating. And we might not get full answers here to some of my questions because we'll see how these games play out. But, like, if SMU – if SMU gets blown out, okay, Clemson runs them off the field, and I'm not expecting that to happen, but, you know, if Clemson wins 42-3, like, to me, that has to factor in to the overall equation. Well, here's a team that at the end of the year, I mean, that is not a team that's looking like it is a championship contender. So to me, that does have to matter, and it does have to be part of the equation. Like, I don't think you can ignore what you're seeing in these conference championship games. At the same time, yeah, if they lose by a touchdown, it's a great question. What, how much are you punishing them for getting to the championship game, which Alabama, I mean, I think most of us would agree if Alabama were to be inserted into the SEC championship game, that would be a fourth loss. So, like, I don't think Alabama right now is beating Texas or Georgia, but maybe they would. And again, you can go across the board. You know, maybe Ohio State would beat Oregon or Penn State. Maybe, well, they're not there. That's the thing. And I know there's been some sentiment out there, and the committee's put it out, that, hey, we're not going to penalize teams for being in the championship game. I just wonder how true that is going to be if a team gets there and, again, gets its doors blown off. You can't pretend that you didn't see that, and that can't have no impact on where you put these teams, or if you put these teams in the playoffs, is my thinking going into it.
And I think, Jeff, using Alabama as the example, they're 5-3 in their conference. That's why they're not in the conference championship game. You lost three games. You didn't earn it. So why, you know, and I know in the conference they have to use wins and losses, but there's a reason why you don't lose games and advance. And the other part to it, you mentioned if SMU gets blown out by Clemson, like 42-3, I'm going to throw a different number out there. What if SMU loses to Clemson, say, like 24-3, and they're dominated? I use those specific numbers for a reason, Jeff.
Yep.
Alabama just lost to Oklahoma, a 500 team, 24-3, and they were dominated. So if you're punishing SMU for a loss to a top 20 or top 15 Clemson team, shouldn't you have been doing the same thing to Alabama? And again, towards that end, some may argue with me, well, Notre Dame had the worst loss, Northern Illinois. True. But you know what? They didn't do it twice. They didn't lose again. Like Alabama had the bad loss against Vanderbilt and came back with another bad loss to Oklahoma. So I'm really finding it difficult to understand Alabama. And a year ago, Florida State undefeated. They don't get in. Who got in instead, Jeff?
Yeah, go figure.
Yeah, go figure. So this all leading up to the question of the Penn State would, if Ohio State had beaten Michigan, Penn State probably would have been pretty much locked into that number five seed. Because they're playing this conference championship, and we could also throw in the Georgia-Texas game, how much is the committee going to punish the losers of those two games?
Yeah, I think Penn State would have been locked in at the sixth seed if Ohio State had won. I think the Ohio State-Oregon loser.
You're probably right. You're probably right.
But which is another interesting take on all of this. And listen, that's another thing, though, Jim, is the – like one of the things – and I don't have an answer here, so I'm not really blasting anybody. It's just like Penn State fans seem to just, well, yeah, Penn State, of course, would go in over Indiana. Well, they did it on criteria, and that's fine. But the criteria, again, is something that Penn State and Indiana had absolutely nothing to do with. That, like, neither of those teams, it wasn't the way they performed. It wasn't the way – it was what the Big Ten – conference, what the office did in putting the schedule together, and then how those teams that just happened to be on your schedule this year went out and performed. And Penn State gets the break, and you know, they, Minnesota and Illinois, have better seasons than a couple of the opponents on Indiana's schedule. Again, I don't have a better solution, so I'm not sitting here. To me, it just is pointing out the difficulty in trying to come up with a system that we would all sit around and agree with. Like, I don't think anybody disagrees that the SEC is a better conference than the ACC or the Big 12. But at the top, does that mean that the fourth SEC team is more deserving than the runner-up in the Big 12 or the ACC? I don't think that's definitive. And I think you can make reasonable arguments either way, because I do think there's more difficult games on most of the SEC team schedules than there are on the ACC or the Big 12 schedules. But like Penn State, we've talked about it all year. They got a break this year, Jim, with their schedule in the Big 10.
They really did. And Jeff, we're out of time in quarter three. We'll pick this up when we get back.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We're talking college football. And Jeff, when we were wrapping up, you were asking the question, which is a tough question to answer. How do you do this in a way that's completely fair? And there's always going to be an argument. You could do it this way, half six of one, half dozen the other in that decision. And I think the issue that I have is not that there's some SEC bias, but there's too much SEC bias. For example, and the other part to this is there's 16 teams in the Southeast Conference, and they only have an eight-game schedule. The disparity in schedules among their own teams is so great.
Yep.
It's what I've been saying for weeks. I think Georgia deserves the benefit of the doubt, because they have three big-time wins to go along with the two losses were against two really good teams. Then over here you have Alabama. Well, first of all, they have a third loss. Second of all, two of those losses were unforgivable, losing to bad Vanderbilt and Oklahoma teams. So that's where I think the bias should end. With Georgia, with their two losses, Georgia is the highest-ranked two-loss team. You know what? They deserve that, Jeff. They do deserve that. Ohio State, they have a couple. They're lost to Oregon, but they have a big time win against Penn State. Bad loss, Michigan. So, all right, let's set that aside. We actually have a football game this weekend, Jeff.
Yeah, we do.
Penn State, Oregon. All right, everyone. First off, you and I were chatting during the Penn State-Maryland game when it was obvious. Penn State was going to win the game. They're going to the conference championship game. And the question on the table was, what's the point spread going to be? What was your answer to that question?
I said 5 or 5.5.
And I thought that was a fantastic number on your part. I think you were going to be spot on. And it turned out to only be 3.5 points. How big a surprise was that?
I was surprised. I thought, you know, we one of our mutual friends thought it was going to be 11.5. Half facetiously, but
we're not going to name him, though, right?
No. But I think I was surprised that it was – as close as it was, although really thinking about it, it shouldn't be that great of a surprise, because a couple of things. Oregon, while it is a neutral site, truly a neutral site game, Oregon does have the little longer trip here to make in. I think Penn State, you know, is ranked third in the country here, so it's not like this is some tremendous underdog. And I think the way Penn State finished up its season factors in here, because I do think Minnesota game notwithstanding and the way they were able to pull that one out, I think actually adds to the feeling that, yeah, you know what, this Penn State team may in fact be a legitimate contender. So I was a little surprised that it wasn't a little more of a spread, but the more I'm thinking about it, the more I think this is probably right in the right ballpark. And I think it's going to be a fun competitive game between two really good teams.
Well, I think actually we were probably more accurate than the people posted the spread, because I've read some things that said most of the money is on Oregon at that number, and that most of the prognosticators that I've seen are picking Oregon to win the game. So leads me to this question, Jeff. What does Penn State need to do to win?
Yeah, I think the two things in my mind that they need to do is, number one, I think Drew Aller and his receivers have to have a good game. Now, Tyler Warren obviously needs to be a factor. The running game of Penn State needs to be a factor, all of that. But to me, this is one of those games where Oregon knows what Penn State's strengths are. Oregon is an outstanding team and a really well-coached football team. And so I think Oregon is basically going to say to Penn State, all right, we're not letting Tyler Warren alone beat us. We're not letting your running game be the determining factor. If you're going to beat us, it's because your receivers are going to make some plays. So I think Penn State's receivers need to go make some plays. And again, that's not to say that the running game won't be a factor, not to say Tyler Warren won't be a factor, but I just, at the end of the day, Penn State is going to have to get some plays, big time plays from its receivers and from Drew Aller, I think, to win this game. And then the other thing is the always obvious in these big games, but they got to win the turnover battle. Penn State has to go out and create at least one more turnover than it gives away, in my mind, to come out on top in this game. But I don't think there's a whole lot separating these teams. I really don't. I think Oregon is, on paper, a little more of a complete team, but I don't think it's by much. And I think Penn State, you know, has a real chance. And I think one of the things for both of these teams is I don't think there's a lot of pressure on either of these programs going into this game, Jim. I don't think there's a world of difference, especially with the home venues that these two teams have, between being a one seed or a five seed in terms of the path to the national championship. And, you know, maybe, I don't know if it's ironic or just interesting, but likely the hope for both of these teams is, regardless of the results Saturday night, they'll meet again in a few weeks in the national semifinals.
Which would be really interesting. Now, it's interesting you brought up the pressure thing. It, to me, there's talk of Oregon, number one team, undefeated. There's the pressure, and Penn State's playing with found money. I do think there is some pressure on Oregon being number one, but I think the pressure on Penn State is what could happen to them if they lose. And I've seen, Jeff, some places that had them all the way down to number eight. I saw another one that had them not getting a home game if they lose this conference championship game, which seems crazy to me. And one of them, just to show inconsistency, and maybe these are people who don't even think this way, they had Georgia, who's ranked behind Penn State right now. They lose the Southeast Conference championship game. Penn State loses to Oregon, but Georgia jumps Penn State.
I really don't see that those things happening. I mean, I guess we'll know for sure when we see it, but I don't think any of those things are happening. And let's start with, I just don't think Penn State is going to get blown out. I mean, is it possible that Oregon wins by like a couple of touchdowns? Sure. I don't think that's beyond the realm of possibility. But, you know, I think Penn State's going to at least hold its own in this game. And if that's the case, I don't see the scenario where Penn State, I guess there's an outside chance that you could move Notre Dame in front and put Penn State as a sixth seed in the tournament, which again, at the end of the day, is where I think they were going to be anyway. So no skin off their teeth, really. But I think to me, again, it's very minimal risk here for Penn State because I don't think they go below a six seed even with a loss to Oregon.
Now, circling back to what you talked about with what Penn State needs to win with the wide receivers, it's my understanding Trey Wallace did practice this week, which is good news for the team and the wide receiver room, Jeff. And I also think, and this kind of ties into what you talked about, I think Penn State has to get away from being conservative. They don't need to establish the run. I think they need to make some big plays. And if it means throwing the ball early in the series, throw the ball on first down, loosen things up, throw to run as opposed to establishing the run to pass the ball. I think you have a big-time quarterback in Drew Aller. And the other part to it, I think, from Penn State's side, a lot of good players on Oregon. But if you want to talk about the very best players on the field, Tyler Warren, Abdul Carter, and I think at his best, Drew Aller could be right there with Dylan Gabriel.
I'm with you. And listen, I think, you know, we've talked about it. I think the depth that Penn State has been able to establish and the way they've been able to withstand, to me, some really significant injuries and, you know, departures with Hakeem Beamon. And it's not insignificant. And I think that the fact that we're even talking about, yeah, I think Penn State without, you know, again, arguably its best offensive lineman. I mean, Anthony Donko had, when he was healthy this year, Jim, he played at a very high level as the season progressed. And I think, you know, losing a couple of defensive tackles and even going back to KJ Winston at the start of the season and the impact that he could have had on the way this whole thing played out. I just think the program as a whole deserves a lot of credit. And I just don't think there's a lot of separation there between Penn State and Oregon. I think this will be a really fun game and a very hotly contested game. And I think part of it is both coaches and I think both teams, they want to go out and win this. I don't want to make it sound like this isn't important to them. I just don't think there's any kind of great pressure. I think the pressure comes when you get into the playoffs and now you need to win in advance. I think this is just kind of a bonus opportunity to get out there and compete and see what you can do. And I think that's really fun.
You got a half minute, Jeff. Your prediction and your bold prediction.
Yeah, I do think Oregon will find a way to win ultimately, but I think it's going to be a terrific game. I've been vacillating all week, going back and forth on who I think will win by a field goal, but I'll give it to Oregon 27-24. My bold prediction, I will say Trey Wallace plays and has over 100 yards receiving.
Wow. You know what? You've really taken to this bold prediction thing, Jeff, really, right. Really well. All right, I like that one. That is it for our show. Everyone enjoy the game Saturday night, and make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.